There once was a man named McSweeney, who spilled some gin on his weenie. Just to be couth, he added vermouth and slipped his girl a martini. Hey everyone, this is Macy.
And Courtney.
And you are listening to The Rest is Confetti. This week, Courtney and I watched the Netflix original film, In the Tall Grass, and I reread the novella by Stephen King and Joe Hill. So today we'll do fairly in-depth reviews, as far as we're concerned, of each of those.
Yes.
Courtney's gonna synopsize the show for you real quick.
After hearing a young boy's cries for help, a sister and brother venture into a vast field of tall grass in Kansas, but soon discover there may be no way out and that something evil lurks within.
So the synopsis for the novella is, In the Tall Grass begins with a sister and brother who pull off to the side of the road after hearing a young boy crying for help from beyond the tall grass. Within minutes, they are disoriented, in deeper than seems possible, and they've lost one another. The boy's cries are more and more desperate, and what follows is a terrifying, entertaining, and masterfully told tale as only Stephen King and Joe Hill can deliver. In the Tall Grass was originally published in two parts in the June, July, and August 2012 issue of Esquire magazine. This is their second collaboration since the novella Throttle, published in 2009. Alrighty, so I'm just going to give a quick little overview of the book. The book and the show are quite different, actually. I remember Courtney and I saw the movie. I keep calling it a show because I'm used to Netflix being shows and not so much movies.
Oh, yeah.
But this is a movie. It's actually a really nicely timed movie. It's like an hour and 40 minutes, I think.
Yeah, like not too hard.
Yeah, it's not bad at all. So this is a short movie, but it deviates a lot from the book. And I remember when Courtney and I saw it for the very first time, we loved the movie. We really, really, really liked the movie. Her husband was in the kitchen and kept yelling, "What the hell is going on in there?" Because we kept squealing and being like, "Oh my God!"
There's some shocking stuff.
There's some shocking stuff for sure. And so I had actually read like half of the novella, I think, before watching the movie. Watched the movie, loved it, finished the novella, and was honestly a little bit disappointed. I do have a greater appreciation for the novella this time around, but honestly, that was only after hearing another Stephen King fan talk about it and hit on some themes that I hadn't picked up on. So, yeah, that's kind of where I stand. But so the difference is in the book, there's no time loop. So if you've seen the movie, you know there's this weird, like, sci-fi time loop going on, and multiple versions of people and stuff like that. The book is nothing like that. It's a very short story. It took about an hour and a half to read. It seems very loosely inspired by H.P. Lovecraft's In the Walls of Eryx. So, bringing it on back to Lovecraft here, everybody.
Very nice.
Woo! So, Cal and Becky are on their way to their aunt and uncle's house. Kind of that. It's written in, like, modern time.
Okay.
But Becky's parents have suggested that she go to her aunt's house during her pregnancy so she can be pregnant in private, which is almost more of, like, a kind of 60s-ish thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's kind of the premise there. In the movie, they're going to San Diego because she has a family she's considering giving the baby up for adoption to. So there's the field is not really in the middle of nowhere. There's this little village of houses around the field, and it is later revealed that these people essentially sacrifice tourists to this field by not warning them about the field, because they live near it, so they know what's going on. They keep their kids away from that field.
Oh, they know, man. What's
going on. But they fail to warn the tourists about it. And then Cal, actually, after his first or second night in the field, hears his car being ransacked. So the locals are going through the cars that get abandoned when tourists go into the field.
That makes it darker.
Yeah, it is. Travis is not a part of the book, like, at all. Becky has a slight memory, but it's weird because it's like maybe a memory, but maybe this weird fever hallucination dream, because she's like having this flashback to babysitting this girl that's essentially implied to be the one who lured Tobin and his family into the field. But she's from New England and they're in Kansas, so I don't know how. So even though there's no time loop in the book, there's some weird stuff like that. So she mentions Travis once or twice, but that's it.
Huh. That's weird.
Ross is really creepy right off the bat in the book. Ooh. He's talking really robotic, where he's like, "Hey, how are you? I'm Ross. Austin Humboldt's the name. Real estate's the game." And he's talking like that. Yeah, it's described as like a text message talk or something. And he does not crush his wife's head in front of everyone. He leads Becky to her body where he's ripped off her arm and started to eat her. And there's chunks and bites taken out of her thighs. So it's like a weird sexual undertone too. And then he tackles Becky, asks if she wants to have sex, all that stuff. She stabs him with a key. And then he brutally assaults her womb. Like, he holds her down and starts kneeing her in the stomach to kill the baby. And I'm not going to read the excerpt, and I'm not going to go into it much more than that, but it's really, really, really upsetting. And I know that both King and Hill kind of have a thing with bad things happening to kids because they're horror writers, and that's kind of the ultimate horror. But this was, there's some parts of the story I find a little bit gratuitous, just personally, where I'm like, you could have had some really upsetting stuff without having that sort of thing, but that's a personal thing, so. But he actually says to her, "No need to make any decisions about the baby now. That's all done. All done." And it's just really awful.
So the book is way darker.
It is. Becky does kill Ross in the book, though. So she's, like, all super badass and awesome in the book and kills him with manicure scissors. She stabs him in the eye over and over until he's, like, dead.
Awesome.
But then, yeah. But then Tobin leads Cal to the rock while all this is going on with Becky. And Cal gets really close to the rock and is about to touch it. And he hears Becky screaming and starts to change his mind. But then the rock, like, the ground shifts and he falls on the rock. So it like forces him to touch it kind of thing.
Ooh.
So it's really weird that way. And then Cal and Tobin are actually the ones that feed Becky her baby, not Ross. So in the book, her brother is feeding her the body of her baby. And that's another gratuitous thing that I'm like, it would have been just as gross. Well, not just as gross. It would have still been gross if it was like eating your placenta against your will and the baby was born because it was too early.
Yeah.
I just don't find it necessary to be like, here, eat your dead baby.
Right?
That was a little much, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And this time, neither King nor Hill had cocaine as an excuse. So.
It is a great excuse, though.
It is. There's no dancing men in the novella. They're mentioned, but no one, like, sees them.
Huh.
And then after Becky is force-fed the body of her dead baby... Oh, and Cal and Tobin eat the baby along with her. It's like a family dinner is what it's described as. It's really awful. And then they convince Becky to touch the rock because at that point she just ate her dead baby. So, like, why not?
Nothing matters after that.
No. And then it ends with the three of them, Cal, Tobin, and Becky, luring in a van of hippies into the grass, and the cycle repeats itself, and that's how it ends.
Yay! Rainbows and sunshine.
So, if you weren't already having a bad day, you are now.
Yeah, this one's intense. This is gonna be for not the average moviegoer.
Yeah, so that was my slightly disoriented... Sorry, I was telling Courtney before the recording, I feel like the first half of our podcast, I am like an idiot. Maybe on the second half too. I don't know. Maybe you think I'm an idiot on the second half too. But I feel like I have to warm up. And so I'm sorry if that was super weird. But that's the overview of the book, the novella. And yeah, we can move on from that into the movie because I enjoyed the movie a lot more. So Courtney, why don't you give me your thoughts on the movie, since I just talked a whole bunch?
This one's a dark one. This bleak. Like, bleak is the word I would use a lot. But being a Netflix original movie, there is one thing that I can always trust in them to do, and that's have really, really awesome cinematography. This movie is so creepy and beautiful at the same time, because it kind of turns the grass into a character all its own. And lots of times it's taking up, like, the whole screen, so you can't see over it. It's very, like, claustrophobic. Like, I had feelings like I had during The Descent during this movie. And I love that. The visuals, I think technically this movie is, like, perfect probably. Maybe a couple things that I would fix, but honestly, I think the only thing that feels forced is, like, the plot a little bit, but also there's not really rules since The Rock, like, bends time and space, so I enjoyed it a lot. I do think it's really dark. The, as you heard Macy say, there is a baby that gets eaten, which is horrifying, but then it kind of gets undone, but you still had to see it, so, you know, I mean, there's still a baby being eaten in front of you, and it's horrifying. And oh my god, Patrick Wilson.
Wow. Did you know he was supposed to be played by James Marsden?
No. Oh my god. Yeah.
And he dropped out because he was going to be in the Sonic movie and there were, like, scheduling discrepancies. And I'm like, thank god. Because I like James Marsden.
Yeah.
But honestly, he's a comedian. He's not a serious actor.
I agree.
And his cheekbones terrify me. Like, I get anxiety.
Too much.
Yeah, I get anxiety looking at his cheekbones.
Especially the older he gets.
Yeah, yeah, seriously. Although he was amazing in Dead to Me. That Netflix show was fantastic, and he was really good in that. But he was still a little bit, like, kind of tongue-in-cheek. But anyway, all of that tangent to say, Patrick Wilson's character, Ross, was supposed to be James Marsden, and I'm so glad that James Marsden did not do this, because first of all, I got to look at Patrick Wilson, who I've never been attracted to, ever, in my entire life. Not in The Alamo, not in The Watchmen,
not in The Conjuring,
not in Hard Candy, not in anything, but oh my god, you stick that man in a Hitler mustache and a pink polo. And you make him feed some woman her dead baby, and I'm all in, and I don't know what that says about me, and I might have to just, I need to go call my therapist, so I'll be right back.
He's just so charming. He definitely stole this movie a little bit. Yeah. I mean, everyone does a great job, especially whoever plays Cal, the brother. I hate him, so good job. You did a good job. You're like, that was the point. But Patrick Wilson, oh my gosh, he's terrifying. He's so creepy.
Yeah, he's so creepy, but he's so charismatic, where I loved that deviation from the novella, because the novella, he pops in and it's immediately like, this dude is messed up. Like, his cadence of speech, the words he's saying, whereas, well, we're getting ahead of ourselves. Slow down, Maisie.
No, it's okay.
Yeah, he's fantastic in this. So, anyway, sorry. Courtney was saying something, and I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no, no. I was, like, I was done with mine. Let's see, what else? Oh, the church. I really love the stained glass in the church, because every church I've ever been to, there is some, usually, at least one window dedicated to the big guy, and then you've got, like, some saints and stuff, but it was just grass, just all grass and sky, and it was so pretty. Again, I just, it was such a pretty movie to watch, but it's so dark in everything it deals with, so it's an interesting balance.
Yeah, I loved that. I did not catch on our first watch, which, I mean, why would we? It was our first watch. We had idea what was going on.
Horrified.
But that the stained glass was the grass, and then obviously the name of the church, the Black Rock of the Redeemer. Which was like, whoa, that is so cool. And also terrifying, because again, it lends to that undertone that there are people who worship this field.
Yes. That, like Children of the Corn style.
Yeah, it had very Children of the Corn vibes to it, but it was way better than that movie.
Oh, God, yeah. That's just like a cult classic.
Oh, fun fact about Children of the Corn, though. My mom's elementary school best friend was in that movie.
That's so cool.
And she wasn't like the main little girl or anything, but she did have like a line and the camera zoomed in on her face. So
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, she was in there. So
I mean, that's more than I've ever done. I know, right? I'd be stoked to do that.
Yeah, and in 9 months, we're going to have Children of the Quarn here, so.
Yes, we will.
Oh, yeah. Not me, but.
We planted our corn today. We planted everything today.
Oh, you planted your seed.
Yes, deep.
Deep with it. Okay, anyway, I'm two gin and tonics in tonight, so.
At least it's kind of like grass-related, garden-related, you know.
Right, it's Earth Day, guys, which I didn't realize it was Earth Day when we were going to be recording this for In the Tall Grass, but I'm really happy with how that worked out.
Right, happy Earth Day, In the Tall Grass. Probably not a good idea to watch it, but, you know.
Yeah.
If you like horrifying stuff like we do.
Right. So the movie was directed by Vincenzo Natali, and the only thing that I'm familiar with of his is the movie Splice. Did you ever see that, Courtney?
Ooh, I did not see it, but I know of it.
It's weird. I watched it in college. Unfortunately, I made my best friend in college watch that with me, and she was not, I mean, she loves Disney movies. Like when her... Which Courtney does, too, so I guess that's not... But she only loved Disney movies. Like, she didn't like the other stuff, too. She only loved Disney movies. And, like, when her boyfriend proposed to her, he had cutouts of all the Disney princesses around where he was proposing, which is awesome. But that's just, like, a little glimpse into who she was as a person.
Right.
And then I'm like, let's watch Splice. And that movie is fucking weird. Dude, there is weird gender... bending alien stuff, there's weird alien rape, there's weird alien sex, there's weird alien impregnation that's not like Ridley Scott's Alien.
Yikes.
It's like super, I at one point, the alien who's been a female changes into a male, holds who has been the mother of this alien down, like who raised the alien.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, what do you want? And it goes... Inside you. And then rapes her. So.
Oh my goodness. So this is an interesting director then.
Yeah. And I didn't love Splice. I didn't think it was great. It made me really uncomfortable with all the weird sex stuff in this, like, parent-child relationship, essentially. Like, adopted child. Yeah. But... all that to say, this director does like science fiction with a touch of horror kind of thing.
Yeah.
And In the Tall Grass was a lot more of a horror, and so he put his little science fiction spin on it with that time loop.
Yep.
So, yeah, I thought that was cool. the Lovecraft story in The Wall of Eryx does not deal with a time loop, but it is an invisible maze. So the novella holds to that a lot more than the movie does.
Yeah.
In that there's the time loop in the movie. None of the other actors besides Patrick Wilson have done a whole lot. Cal didn't have a filmography. The guy who played him, the person who played Becky, who Becky and Cal don't look like siblings.
At all.
No.
I feel not like, even a little.
Like, they have very different heritages.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah, so that was kind of, like, Becky looks, like, kind of Cuban.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'd buy that they were half siblings, maybe.
Yeah, like, Cal's so white that he should feel guilty. So.
I mean, he should feel guilty for a lot of things.
Yeah. Ooh, we will get the to
hard,
Cal.
The hard incest tones.
I hate that his name was Cal. My son's name is Cal. And I hate that this guy's name is Calvin. Ugh. So, yeah. The like Courtney touched on the visuals, the way this movie starts is just the grass, like it's just grass filling the screen. It's so cool.
Mm-hmm. Very like ASMR quality kind of stuff too. Mm-hmm. The sound and the way it moves and sways.
Oh yeah, and it breathes at one point, which is just amazing.
When it stops, that's what really gets me though.
Oh, yeah, that was, and I pointed that out when, well, Courtney noticed it too, because she was there when we watched it for the first time.
I was there.
But, oh my gosh, I did not get chills at any other time, like when I did with, and I can't remember what the line was, I just watched it, but I was running a little late, so I did skip ahead a couple parts. Someone says something, essentially insulting the grass, and Patrick Wilson just stares at them, and the grass just stops, which it's been moving very naturally up to that point, so mm-hmm. There was no impression. We know the grass is alive, but it just kind of looked like the wind was blowing it, and then it just stops.
All together.
In the words of Keanu Reeves, whoa.
Whoa.
Or Owen Wilson, wow.
Wow. It's a whoa wow moment, guys.
Yes. Indubitably.
Indubitably.
So it reminded me a lot of Cornfields when we watched it the first time. They don't say that they're in Kansas, I don't think, in the movie. But I told Courtney, I swear they're in Illinois.
Oh, I would either that or Indiana, somewhere close.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the descriptions, they do a really good job visually. And then in the novella, the descriptions of them walking through this grass, it's so hot. And the grass is cutting their skin, but those little tiny cuts. And it's mm-hmm. muddy and muggy and it's hot. And Courtney and I live in the Midwest. We grew up running through cornfields. But we had the option to leave them. So
we're not going at all.
I could like feel the discomfort.
Right.
Yeah. Oof. I think that they established so well really early on that the grass is like moving things around. That was phenomenal.
Oh yeah. And it's such a simple concept, but they just mm-hmm. made it look so flawless.
Yeah. And such a nice, quick way to establish exactly what is going on. Because you start to kind of like suspect when like voices are moving, but it's more of that, ooh, what's going on? But when they jump up, you're like, oh, that is what is going on. 100%. Oh, yeah. And that's when I started watching this movie by myself originally. And the scene where Becky and Cal jump and they're close together, they jump again and he's super far away, I stopped it right there. And texted Courtney. I was like, we're watching this together. I'm not watching anymore without you.
Oh, it was such a great idea.
Back when we were allowed to be in the same room.
I do miss those days.
Yes. One day.
It's all right. We'll be able to be in the outdoors safely together soon. So that'll be
yes.
good enough for now.
I actually wrote on my notes, Daddy Wilson just came on the scene.
In his really, really tight business casual attire.
And it's pink. Not that pink can be a guy's color, like, whatever. But I just don't necessarily find myself personally being like, ooh, that guy's in pink. Ha ha. Right, or any color, really.
Especially, like, a real estate dude or stock, but whatever he is. Like, yeah. I just don't see it. No.
I don't know what movie Patrick Wilson has been working out for. But it's, please keep working out for that movie.
Oh my gosh. He was, the scene where the grass has overtaken him and his eyeballs are just kind of empty, that haunts me.
Oh, it haunts me in a really, really good way. I'm sorry. I'm just like so into Patrick Wilson in this movie. And I, like I said, I'm legitimately going to talk to my therapist about this because it's like weirding me out. But it's the feelings are real, man. I don't know. I'm like all flushed.
He's incredible.
He's fantastic. And again, he's in a short sleeve polo shirt. Like what the? I threw my husband's short sleeve polo shirts away. No offense if any of our listeners wear short sleeve polo shirts, but I don't like them. And I threw Tyler's away. But Patrick Wilson can wear them all he wants.
He gets a pass every day.
He does. Okay, back to the movie. Yeah, I've been listening to a couple podcasts that are talked about Stephen King's novella and the movie. And a lot of people don't seem to like the time loop aspect, but I prefer it. I really like it.
Yeah, I liked it. I feel like they could have gone into more lore. That's usually my mm-hmm. hang up with almost every movie, yeah. is I just want more background information. So, But exactly. Yeah.
But I loved that. So Courtney and I have similar complaints with either give us zero background information and make it totally ambiguous and we'll accept it, or mm-hmm. give us all the rules. Mm-hmm. But don't do in between. Don't give a little bit here. Like Us, the movie Us, fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love that movie. I would have preferred it if they hadn't tried to explain it, because it would have been, I was watching that movie like an episode of The Twilight Zone. This is the world. Yeah. These are the rules. Accept mm-hmm. it or get out. But then the second you try to explain it and you don't do a good job, some things are unexplainable. You just can't. Mm-hmm. And that's okay, but don't try, because then I'm sitting there like, but that didn't make sense. And now I'm worried about that.
Now I'm hung up on this instead. Yeah.
You can't make enough rabbits to feed everyone in the tunnels.
I just like that someone put that that should be considered an Easter movie, so I'm definitely going to watch it for Easter next year.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I'm so sad I didn't think of that this year.
I was like, it's literally just because there's bunnies in it, but I accept this. I accept it.
Well, you know, it has just as much to do with the Bible as actual Easter, so.
That's fair. Yeah.
Quick, Peter, hide the eggs.
The rules of this place are vague.
Yeah. So all that to say, we really like the time loop, and we're fine with it being ambiguous, although we like it, so we would like more lore
if it was there. Yeah, lore on the rock or the rock people, that would have been cool.
Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts? On my second watch, when Ross first comes on the scene, so Tobin's like real creepy and obviously has touched the rock because we see him touch it again. And he goes, ooh, that feels good. And I'm like, oh, this is uncomfortable coming from a kid. When Patrick Wilson does it, it's fine. But when the kid does it, it's not okay.
It's too creepy.
Too creepy. So Tobin has obviously touched the rock when we first see him. He tries to get Cal to touch it. I kind of got the impression, and it's kind of my headcanon, that Ross hadn't touched the rock yet. Because he seemed really likable and kind and genuine. And then
that was kind of what I thought.
Yeah, like he and Becky got separated and he didn't come back to her, because if you touch the rock, you know how to get around the grass, so you can find whoever you want, no problem. So mm-hmm. And then Becky dies, and it looks like Natalie killed her.
I did think that. Yeah, I really almost need to rewatch it again, because I feel like that's the one part that I'm always like, who is that, though?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, on both watches, that's the impression I got, was that it looked like it was Natalie, Tobin's mom, who killed Becky. We mm-hmm. never really find out, though, and that's okay, although I do kind of wish I knew. But yeah, my impression is that Tobin has touched the rock, possibly Natalie touched the rock if she killed Becky, and Ross has not touched it yet. But then Travis comes along, and it's almost like Travis is the one that starts the new loop.
Mmm. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then in the new loop, Ross is the one that touches the rock, and Tobin and his mom don't.
Ooh, okay. Like a butterfly effect. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I like the idea that the loops, there's a loop, but every loop is different, but mm-hmm. then at the same time, Cal always dies after the bowling alley, because there's all those...
There were a lot of Cal bodies.
Which, you know what? Give me more good Cal bodies, because I hate Cal.
Oh, I was so happy when he died. That was, like, the one justifying moment of the whole thing.
That dude definitely shipped Jaime and Cersei in Game of Thrones.
Hard. Oh, it's so creepy and so obvious and just ew.
Ew. Yeah, when he and Becky are in the car and Becky's like, what do you know about women's bodies? And he goes, not enough. And then he licks his lips as he's looking at her. I'm like, ew.
Gross.
We both have brothers that we are very close to, but that is disgusting.
Oh my God. Yeah, I like threw up in my mouth a little. I was just, yeah. Ugh.
Ugh.
Ew, we don't like Cal. Cal's gross.
Yeah. And in the novella, it's implied a little bit that there's at least a probable inappropriate level of emotional intimacy, there's not really any implication that either one of them want to physically be together. But in the movie, it's flat out
brought up
that Cal
wants Travis calls to sleep his ass Becky. Out.
Oh, yeah. Which Travis reminded me a lot of Sebastian Stan from the Marvel
movies. Yes, so much.
Yeah, especially with the hat on. I don't know. Ooh, he looks different with the hat. But
he's so dark featured. Yeah, I can see that.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Becky never dies in the book. She dies in the movie because there's a time loop, so she comes back. But that caught me so off guard when on our first watch through.
Oh, God, yeah. I was so just like, this is the bleakest movie ever. Oh, no.
Yeah, because you're led to believe that she's a main character, which she is. But then she dies so early on, you're like, I guess she's not a main character? And it was so disturbing to me. When you find her corpse later, how her belly is flat. Like, that's just what I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, the baby's died and decayed, and so there's no baby bump. It's like, oh, it's so upsetting.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah, so I think it's after Becky dies. I'm not sure. But at one point, I didn't catch this first watch either, but the grass, when it moves and there's that chant, it's chanting, "We are the grass." And I'm like, ooh. Oh, yeah. I don't want to be the grass, but you can be the grass.
This does I'm blown away by the way the movie uses, like, the atmosphere to just make mm-hmm. everything so dark. And, ew, and the earth, like, opens up under her.
Ooh, oh, yeah.
And all the and little all the hands. Hands. Yeah. That was truly the stuff of nightmares, guys. Truly.
Oh, yeah. And such a simple concept of just a field of grass. But we all, again, Courtney and I grew up in the Midwest around cornfields. All the children here are taught from a very early age, if you get lost in a field, you follow a row until you find your way out. Like, that's a thing, is getting lost in fields.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of being lost, we've all been lost in a field before, even if it wasn't for very long.
Oh,
the
yeah.
idea that you couldn't get out even if you wanted to is terrifying.
Right. No chance to get, like, new food or anything like that. It's just, mm-hmm. oh, it's so scary.
Yeah. And they're thirsty in the movie. It's pretty obvious. But the book really goes into it because there's a lot of inner monologues because it's a book.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the thirst made my throat dry. Like, I needed a bunch of water when I was listening to the book again.
I believe it. Oh, that would be so awful.
As I drink gin, I need more moisture. Give me alcohol. Oh, also, Christine was in the parking lot at the church, by the way.
That's a cool nod. I did not even notice that.
I love that Stephen King has such a legacy that in his own little, even when he's not the one doing the movie or whatever, because I think the director of this said, as far as he knows, Stephen King hasn't even seen the movie. So he was not at all involved.
Yeah.
They allowed him to be involved if he wanted, but he just wasn't really interested, which, that's fine. Sometimes that's better. I love you, Stephen King, because I know you're listening. But sometimes it's better when he's not involved.
I agree.
Bless his little heart. So, yeah, I thought that was cool. But.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, this one, it's creepy. It's very creepy. I feel like I don't have that much to say about it just because it is. It's such a simple concept, and that's why I like it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is pretty simple. There's a lot of social dynamics and interactions and things, but the overall idea is pretty simple. Even the loop is pretty simple. Every time the group of people dies, they go back in, essentially.
Mm-hmm. And just keep going in circles. That's got to be mm-hmm. super fun.
Yeah. The phone call, when Becky gets that phone call, and it's herself from the future, was so creepy and so good.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, that doesn't happen in the book because there's no time loop. So I love the time loop so much because that's so creepy and unsettling. And this movie still wasn't long. It took the same amount of time to watch the movie as it did to... I listened to the book this time with an audiobook. So it was the same amount of time. It was great. Like, I really, really liked that.
Oh my gosh, yeah, this is definitely a good one. Like I said, the cinematography, everything's so pretty, but then also horrifying.
Yeah.
And it's never too much, and I just like it. I feel like Netflix just is really getting good at making these nice little horror films.
They are. And also they really love the Sam Cooke intro, because Gerald's Game had Bring It On Home by Sam Cooke. And this one, I can't remember what the name of the song was by Sam Cooke, but I love me some Sam Cooke, and I really like when he is the intro song to my Netflix original Stephen King movies.
Absolutely.
And we'll be doing Gerald's Game eventually, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, yeah, we will. Oh man.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God.
The nightmares from that one.
Yeah. Gerald's Game, starring the cast of The Haunting of Hill House.
Basically. That's why we love it so much.
And Dr. Sleep.
I love it.
Which, I don't know, I kind of want to cover Dr. Sleep eventually, too. I know that was more of a blockbuster. It's not really in the vein of what we do here, but I love it, and this is our podcast. We can do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, I agree. We're definitely going to have to do that one.
We'll do that director's cut. I don't know if you saw my message earlier. Mike Flanagan said that he actually has, on the Blu-ray, a 3-hour director's cut of Dr. Sleep, and it is completely finished with a soundtrack and visual effects, and it watches more as a book. It's more literary, are the words that he used.
Okay.
And he said it's very different. There's extra scenes. There's scenes that are changed and different from the theatrical version.
Well, so, I'm really excited.
Yeah. If we do Dr. Sleep, which I would like to, because Dr. Sleep is my favorite book.
Absolutely. Then,
this podcast is all about me.
You just have such good recommendations, though. They're always good.
What can I say? So back to In the Tall Grass. One of the other complaints, Courtney has a Pennywise plushie.
I just had to surprise you with that at some point. He's so cute.
I love it. My family forbade me. I almost bought my son in an alien chestburster, a stuffed alien chestburster, when he was still in the womb, and I wanted to buy it as his first stuffy.
Oh my gosh.
And because I was going to get a face hugger, but then it wasn't as cuddly with all the legs, so I wanted to get the chest burster, and my family was like, no. Never. So I bought him a Fizzcake from the Dark Crystal instead.
I think that's an acceptable runner-up.
Yes, Fizzcake gets weekly conditionings and brushing because he's very matted and low quality.
Oh, I bet.
All right. So anyway, back to In the Tall Grass. I have heard some complaints about the CGI. And yeah, the CGI is nothing to write home about. It's not It's not great. It's very obviously CGI. That being said, the CGI is only used when you couldn't have done the shot, like, inside someone's uterus while they're still alive. So I don't know who wanted to volunteer to have the camera put up there. No one did, though. They did CGI. And that's probably one of my biggest complaints about this movie, was that I didn't really know what that whole thing was with the grass going in her uterus.
Yes. Like, I would agree. Like, is it, like, a foreshadowing? Was it a warning? Is it
happening?
Yeah, is it happening? Was the baby made of actual grass? Not that that would make it any better to eat, but
right. I feel like I'd notice if a bunch of grass went up my hoo-ha.
I would but say she was so.
Really tired and thirsty, so maybe she didn't. I don't know. I have no idea what was going on.
She was clearly hallucinating, so anything's possible, probably.
Yeah, I think the safest bet is that it was more of a, and now I've totally lost the word and it's escaping me. It was just kind of a visual representation, like, of the idea, and it wasn't actually happening exactly like that, but that the grass was, like, permeating, and because the baby was still forming, it was, like, becoming one with the grass and stuff. But yeah, I don't know. Like, you could have cut that out and you wouldn't have noticed.
I would agree.
Yeah. So that was weird. And that was the poorest CGI. Because people have also complained, like, oh, the rock looks CGI and the sky looks CGI. Everything's supposed to look otherworldly. It's supposed to look weird, and it was fine.
Otherwise, it would be kind of boring.
Yeah, like, what are they going to... You want them to film it like Monos, the Hands of Fate?
You do not. Never let Monos happen again.
No! Protect the film industry.
Oh my gosh.
Oh goodness. So yeah, I also noted that this is, movie and book-wise, one of the more horrific and disturbing stories from King and Hill. Yeah. And I'm including Nosferatu, because even though that was really, really sad, it had a happy ending. Because Stephen King, you know, he's really kind of... Everything's really disturbing and upsetting, and he does a lot of violence against children, but he's also a really hopeful writer.
I would agree, yeah. I mean, I made it through It, and that was rough, mm-hmm. but...
Yeah, it's like the story, in the middle of the story, beginning, middle, and close to end, it's really awful, but then it always ends with, like, a really beautiful thing. And this, the movie did. It was sad but beautiful. The novella mm-hmm. does not end... uplifting or hopeful or happy or anything. That honestly, the novella I could never with good conscience recommend to someone, and I don't like it. I can appreciate it a lot, and I do think it's very good, but it's not something that you like, you know?
Yeah, you won't enjoy it.
Right. It's not enjoyable. And the movie is a tough watch, but it, like, was really emotional at the end. It made me, like, really happy how Travis kind of redeemed himself and kind of abandoning Becky.
Yeah, there was a payoff. Himself. Definitely a more positive payoff.
Yeah, and Becky decides to keep her baby, and she's like, this is my family now, and Travis gets to see his girlfriend and daughter go off and have a life. Even though he doesn't get to be a part of it, without him, they wouldn't have had a life at all. They would have died.
Yeah, that's true. Travis is the MVP.
Heck yeah. Everybody else is, like, stupid. I mean, Becky's not stupid, but she just didn't know what was going on, so.
Yeah. And is pregnant, so, I mean, she's already tired.
She looks great for 6 months pregnant.
Right?
I would have gotten to the ditch and laid down and been like, I'm done. All right.
That's all the help I can offer today, guys.
Yeah. I was a cow when I was pregnant. It was bad. She's taller than me. That's what it is.
That's what it is, I tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish Cal would have stayed dead. I don't like that he lived at the end.
Yeah, but I like to think that since she stood up to him, maybe at least from there, they just continued as brother and sister and not the incest tones.
Yeah, which were very one-sided, I'll say. Becky had gave no indication. Oh, yeah.
She was obviously into it.
No. She kind of seemed ignorant, honestly.
Yeah, like, what are you talking about? Like, oh, did we all see it?
Yeah, girl. Actually, in the book, the one part that Travis is involved in the book is Becky is having an argument with him over the phone or something. And he was like... Why don't you just have your brother help raise the baby? I'm surprised he wasn't sitting there when I got you pregnant. No. I was like, ooh. But so in the book, it actually does imply that Becky kind of knows, but just doesn't, like, she just ignores it. In the movie, she's just oblivious.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. but yeah, it, so even if he continues, even if Cal continues those weird incestuous things, you know, I don't get the impression he'd ever hurt her or anything. So the baby is, even though he's weird and I hate him, the baby will probably have, like, a good father figure in lieu of Travis because he sacrificed himself.
Yeah. Definitely.
I love that the portal led to the church.
Yeah, that weird was cool.
Locked room. I want a prequel about the church because obviously there was this congregation and the church and that room had something to do with it all.
Oh, yeah. Again, more lore. I want all the lore on everything.
Yeah. Kind of like Apostle. Although Apostle, I wish the whole thing just would have been a miniseries. This, I want a prequel.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So, yeah, pretty cool. There was a lot of LSD involved in the making of this film.
For sure.
So, the part where Becky is being carried to the rock when she's in labor.
Oof, that was a rough one.
Yeah, the grass face people when she hits them and the grass face just grows back.
Oh, I hate that. That's probably my least favorite part. Mm-hmm. Like, scary-wise, I would say is the grass-faced children that haunts my nightmares.
Yeah. Yeah. That was very disturbing. And the grass breathing around her, and then, like Courtney talked about, the ground collapsing and all those hands under the... I would have loved to know what that was. Was it, like, versions of her kid? Was it just...
Are these, the like, people? The people that, like, follow it? Yeah, like, the children of the corn?
Yeah. Which, part of me wishes that this was, like, a children of the corn 50 years later kind of thing. But it's not corn, it's grass, so it's not the same.
Yeah, exactly.
But that would have been kind of cool, I think. Especially with the whole children of the corn has the weird underground thing that's never described, and then yeah. Randall Flagg's in that. It would have been cool to see a little Randall Flagg in here, but again,
always.
Randall Flagg is he who walks behind the rose, and these are not rose, this is a field of grass. So I understand it doesn't really make sense for the story, but I'm just kind of a slut for combined universes.
I agree.
It's part of the reason I love King. The combined universe, how everything is connected. I think it's awesome.
I've always loved it.
Yeah. So, yeah, when Travis touches the rock, that was super cool. His vision and the rose lighting up and all that stuff. Great visuals again.
The acting and the visuals were amazing. And mm-hmm. It's very unsettling, just deeply. Yeah. Like you said, like I wouldn't watch it by myself.
Yeah. And then we get to see the phone call come full circle when Becky makes the phone call again to her past self.
It's so sad.
Yeah. Which you can't think, you know, this kind of thing, time travel, time loops, you can't think too hard about it because she made the phone call because she knew to make the phone call because she heard the phone call that she had made in the past when she was in the future. And you're like, but who made the first phone call to make her make the phone call? Because she wouldn't have known to make the phone call to make the phone call.
Time loops will do this to you.
Yep. Don't try too hard. Just, again, this is an episode of The Twilight Zone. It is a world with rules that we cannot comprehend, and we accept them, and we enjoy the ride. Whee! Mm-hmm. Whee!
I was scared.
So the acting was amazing. Everyone in this movie, Freddy was the MVP. Poor doggo.
Poor dog.
Everybody was great. Tobin was great. Obviously, Patrick Wilson is great. Because, again, while this is the first time I've ever been attracted to him, he's always been a great actor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they really mommed Rachel Wilson up. She played Natalie.
I looked up
pictures of her, and I'm like, oh, she's really young and beautiful. She looks really old and frumpy in this movie.
Hella old and frumpy.
She's wearing a fanny pack that has hand sanitizer and manicure scissors in it, so I don't know how much more mom you can get.
It's true.
It's like, ooh. Although, I'm reaching the point of motherhood where I'm like, man, fanny packs, that would be really, really useful, actually.
That would be so convenient.
I'm like, no, Macy, don't do it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so everyone was great. No one other than Patrick Wilson has done a whole lot. I think Becky has done the most out of anyone. Tobin was great. Child actors. We are in an age for child actors.
We really are. We're being blessed.
Heck yeah. So yeah, that was phenomenal. The plot, we kind of talked about that. It doesn't make any sense and it's confusing, so just enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Sit back and accept the universe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Courtney and I really like stuff like that. So you know, if you don't like things that have very ambiguous or no rules at all, consider that when listening to our recommendations, because we like stuff like that. And if you don't, then keep that in mind. We talked about special effects too. Everything was great. CGI was not great with the baby and the heart and stuff. But everything else that was CGI, even if I could tell that it was CGI, I was fine with it. It didn't bother
me. Oh, yeah. I feel like they did. I mean, the most important thing was how they made the grass look, and I felt that they did a really good job of that. So,
yeah.
Good enough in my book.
I don't have anything else to say about In the Tall Grass. Do you, Courtney?
No, like I said, it's got that simple concept, which is why I like it so much. But yeah, it is overall good, horrifying, awesome visuals. Very specific people I would recommend this to.
Yeah, I would not at all just go on Facebook and be like, watch In the Tall Grass.
Right, no, awesome. Someone eats a baby, so.
Yeah, I don't think I could ever recommend it to anyone ever, actually, because of that. I mean, maybe one person, but I would still warn them. At this point, this happens. Don't do it.
It's not like how we recommend everyone Frankenhooker.
Oh, Frankenhooker is cinematic perfection. Move over, Velocipastor.
It's a tie for me now.
Yep.
But yeah, what do we want to rate this one?
Ooh, what should we use? And Courtney and I were talking about mustaches because I frequently bring up Patrick Wilson in this movie. I sound so horny. I'm really not. I'm not this person who's all like, oh my gosh, this guy is so hot.
It just caught you off guard, you know?
It's just, we all have our dude in the thing. And unfortunately, somehow, I ended up with Patrick Wilson and In the Tall Grass. And I have no control over that.
You should not apologize.
No. But Courtney and I were talking about it, and I was like, when did mustaches, because there was another guy we saw who had a mustache, and we were like, he can wear the mustache, and it's like, he looks better with the mustache than without. When did this happen? Well, his mustache was really, really thick, and he had the stubble with it. And so we're like, oh, that makes sense, because also Henry Cavill has that in Mission Impossible, and, you know, he wears that well. But then we were like, Patrick Wilson literally has a Hitler mustache. It's Patrick Wilson in this movie wears a molestache.
It's so bad. And but so great.
It works for him. I don't know.
It does. It's eerie, but it does.
Oh, so weird. maybe we do black rocks for this.
Okay.
System. Because I'll shut up about Patrick Wilson.
Out of how many black rocks?
So on a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being a perfect movie and 1 being I hated it, I would give this movie a 3.5.
I would agree. 3.5.
Yeah.
Really good visuals, though. Like a 4 on the visuals, though.
Yeah. Like, I honestly don't know if I'll ever watch this movie again, because I've seen it twice now, and I've read the book twice, and I really enjoyed all... I was disappointed in the book the first time, because I was expecting it to be like the movie, which I enjoyed. It seems like people who read the book first didn't like the movie. People who saw the movie first didn't like the book. That seems to be the general consensus, but...
Alright.
I enjoyed all of my readings and viewings, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again.
Yeah, it's just, it's too heavy. The source material is just a little too heavy, but it's definitely worth a watch if you like really visual stuff and really claustrophobic stuff.
Yeah. Like, if I wanted claustrophobia, I would revisit The Descent 100 times.
Which we will.
Yeah, before this, I think, so.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. Well, are you reading or watching anything super fun or listening to any podcast or music that you want to share with people?
Oh, man. Music. I'm still on kind of an EDM kick. I'm trying to get myself, like, dancing a little bit every day because it makes you feel good. So the Chemical Brothers, I'm still bumping music-wise. I did start the Titan show that you gave me, and I love it. And I've been alternating like that and Teen Titans Go, which are nothing alike, but both amazing in their own right.
Oh, Titans is so good, you guys. Starfire, I don't know what they were thinking with the styling of her character. That's really weird. and I can't get behind it. I cannot be okay with it. But you know
what? It's the only thing I don't really like so far.
Right. It works better than I thought it would when I first saw the set photos, though.
Okay.
So, ugh. But so you've probably already been introduced to Hawk and Dove, like, vaguely, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Have you gotten their backstory at all?
No.
Okay. That's my favorite episode, and I love them even more than the Titans, and they're amazing, yes. and they show up more in season two, and it's great. But I'm so glad you like Titans, because it's very R-rated, and it's fantastic.
Oh my gosh, yes. And I'm always, Beast Boy is always my favorite. Mm-hmm. Like, in any canon of the Titans, I love Beast Boy so much. I might get a Beast Boy tattoo.
Yes! Oh, that would be amazing. Mm-hmm. I love him too. I'm a Raven person. I was Raven for Halloween.
And it was awesome.
Oh, I loved it. I put way too much gray makeup on my face, and I couldn't smile, but that was okay. She doesn't smile very much.
It's true. So you looked the part. It was awesome.
'Twas fine. I am, again, still reading Lovecraft. I finished the Tommyknockers. I knew to prepare for this segment and didn't, so...
No worries.
I'm actually reading the Witcher book series. I read the first one in the 90s. I'm a 90s baby, and they came out in the 90s. It was a long time ago that I started reading them and didn't finish them for some reason. I'm not sure why. Probably when my family was going through a weird church phase and like couldn't read the Witcher. So I am rereading all those. I'm doing the short stories right now, which is what the first season of The Witcher was based on for the most part.
Sweet.
And I'm really enjoying that. And then listening to podcasts, give a little shout out to Stephen King Cast, because that's who I listened to today. And yeah, it's just one guy, and he goes through all of Stephen King's stuff, and he'll re-release episodes sometimes when it's been like 4 years since he read it last, and that's kind of cool to hear updated thoughts. He reviews movies,
like
shows, all kinds of things, and it's really enjoyable. So go subscribe to him and listen to his stuff, because he's great.
Yes.
All right, everybody. Well, I think that does it for tonight. So thanks for hanging out with us and talking about Netflix and Stephen King and horror and sci-fi and all the weirdness and sexy Patrick Wilson's. And if you want to get in contact with us and tell me to shut the hell up about Patrick Wilson, you can email me confettipod@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter or Instagram, confettipod, and we will talk to you next week.
Have a good one, guys.
Bye. Been making drinks only for myself, and now my pants don't fit.
Rawr. Rawr.
Like, this baby cannot be born in Canada. If only mother had crossed her legs for 2 more days.
If only.
The hickiest, I don't know if that's the word, hickey. Well, hickey kind of implies that someone sucked on your neck.
He also had the unfortunate thing of being born a Kentucky baby. Right, we're like, please, anywhere but Kentucky. I'm screwed either way. Yay. It's such a thin little stash, little porn stash.
I want that mustache to brush my upper lip. You're driving through the hills of Kentucky. You hear banjos playing. People are shouting at your car. You got a pretty mouth. And then you pull up and someone's like, you're trash. Where's your giant hat and your mint julep?